Real people.
Real celebrities.
Real talk.
Join the Breakfast Club.
Blast off in your
weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest, an author in the building with us this morning.
That's right, my man MK Asante.
MK Asante.
Now, I read this guy's book about 2-3 weeks ago, and it's funny because I had the book sitting up here for the longest.
For a long time, right?
It's called Buck, but I don't know what made me decide to read it a couple weeks ago, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm like, yo, we got to have this guy up here to talk about His book, Buck.
Well, explain to us what Buck is. I didn't get a chance to read it. I don't really have much time to read. I got four kids.
As you can tell by the way he writes, he talks, he doesn't read.
And he's talking about me over there. Yeah. Now tell us about Buck.
All right. Well, first of all, it's really an honor to be here. I watch you guys all the time.
Thank
so, you.
You
know what I'm saying? Much love.
D-riding, bro. Yo, you're giving him props, you D-riding. You saw Charlamagne D-riding his book. Now he D-riding Charlamagne.
Well, yo, you read the book and you were thirsty. So, you know what I mean?
Thirsty.
I had to come
on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, when you show interest, that means thirst these days.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just happy to be here. But, you know, Buck is about the graceful survival against impossible circumstances. You
so
know
it's
what
like
saying?
What?
I'm from Philly. You know what I mean? Young Buck, Buck Wild, Buck Shots, Buck Town, Slave Buck, Black Buck, Make Buck, Buck Now. Buck encompasses all of those things. I chose the title because it really, my life, it's a coming-of-age memoir. It's my story. It's my journey growing up through Philly, navigating my education, my very informal education, miseducation, re-education, self-education, street education, the difference in the distance between school and education.
Mm-hmm.
That was all me. And so it's about that journey. It's about my family. It's about my community. It's about how I became, you know, I was someone who got kicked out of every school I went to.
Why?
And then
he was a bad seed. He was a thug.
And then ended up being the youngest tenured professor in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know
How
what I mean?
How old are you?
I'm 32 now. But
you look 19.
But when I became a professor, I was 23. And I got tenure when I was 26. You know what I mean? So I've been at academia for a while. And so it's about my journey.
Well, tell us about this journey a little bit. So you're from Philadelphia. You, as Charlamagne would say, you got kicked out of every school. So you were a young thug.
You know what I mean? Shout out to all the kids that, you know, are being overlooked right now. Shout out to all the kids that are labeled bad because they're really...
Well, you weren't bad if you were selling dope.
No, I wasn't selling dope.
Okay.
But there is some drug selling that goes on in the book and in my life.
What did you do so bad as a child?
In my life, you know, I think I was just rebellious. Mm-hmm. I was rebelling against everything. You know what I mean? I think first of all, the school system, right? It's redundant. It's boring. You know, rote memorization, regurgitation. I wasn't actually learning anything in school. Plus, my family situation was kind of crazy. My brother, he was locked up. My mom, I write about mental health issues. My mom was institutionalized. She has severe depression, suicidal. So my mom was in and out the institutions. You know what I'm saying? And so
your mom and father split.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? So all of these things kind of created a perfect storm. Plus, we had the corner boys on my block. You know what I'm saying? They were always out there, and they introduced me to everything. You know what I mean? So by the time I was 14, it was on. You know what I mean? Like everything you could imagine, everything you don't want your child to, your four kids, everything you don't want them to do,
you were doing.
I was doing. You know what I'm saying? So
your brother's locked up. It's two questions I want to ask you about them.
Yeah.
Is your brother out now?
My brother is definitely out. What's up, Uzi? Ooh-wop, Big Uzito. That's my hero.
First of all, he has to change his name from Uzi.
Ooh-wop, Uzi is not it.
How many years did he do? Like,
he was in and out, you know what I'm saying? But when he was in Arizona, which is for most of the book, the book takes place between the ages of 13 and 18.
Gotcha.
And so he was like locked up for most of that time when I was coming
up. He shot somebody.
No.
That's what he was in jail for in Arizona?
No. Remember...
Did you read the book?
Yeah. But he shot somebody.
Nah, he didn't shoot anybody. You know what I'm saying?
He was just... beat him up or something.
Nah, he didn't beat anybody up, but he did beat other people up. That he just didn't get locked up for that.
Slow down. What was he locked up for in Arizona?
In Arizona, it was a situation with a young girl, and he was young himself.
Oh,
he was 17.
Rape. Yeah,
it was statutory.
Yeah, got you. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But he was young himself. He was 17. The girl was like 14. He didn't know. She was white. He's black, obviously, and she was a runaway. Her parents found out, and it was just, you know.
Right, gotcha.
He got put in the system.
So what got you straight, from being on the corner with the D-boys and being so rebellious? What got you to fix up?
I mean, there was a couple factors, man. First of all, I saw where that life takes you, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whether it was my brother, whether it was one of my best friends, Amir, who got murdered while I was there. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things kind of shaped me, but also the blank page, man, that's what this book really is about. It's about finding your purpose. That blank page saved me. America enraged me. Then that trick paid me. New slaves, old slavery. Grandma told me streets far from holy. Now I'm lonely. My homies' bodies is holy. So basically, the blank page saved me. That blank piece of paper in front of me. The first time I got a creative writing assignment. The first time I was able to express myself. Things started flowing and I gripped the pen and something shot down my spine and sat me straight up. You know, the pen was heavy like it was made of stone. And that first class, man, that first time I was able to express myself, it changed my life because then from writing, I started reading. I wanted to be a good writer, so I had to be a good reader. And when I started reading, I had an epiphany. Like, oh, now I realize why reading was illegal for slaves back in the day, because I realized that we think in words, we sub-vocalize. Right. So the more words we know, the more things we can think about. And so for me, reading became connected to my liberation.
And it helps you transcend your circumstances too, because they always say anything you want to hide from a black person, put it in a book.
You know what I'm saying?
The information is there. We just gotta give ourselves access to it.
Now, you said something earlier about the curriculum of most schools, you know, and you said it's boring and kids don't get it. And I agree with that. And I'm a big... Definitely with my kids, where I want to show them life. Like, I like to take them out. I like to teach them what a mortgage is and how to invest money, because I think with that, they learn more and it's more interesting.
Real
because it's
education.
Real life. And I hated school. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I wasn't into it. So, you know, during school, I always dreamed of what I wanted to do, whether it was music, whether it was play ball or whatever it was. Now, you also said you're a professor.
Yes.
Now, explain to us how you teach. What makes you different than all of the things you said you disliked?
Okay, that's what's up. Well, I'm a professor at Morgan State University, which is in Baltimore, Maryland.
Let me tell you one thing about Morgan State. I'm going to tell you why I didn't go.
Okay.
when I went to Morgan State to check it out, to go on a tour, they were playing dice.
It was too black for that beige boy.
No, they were playing dice on the actual dorm steps. And my dad was like, you're not going to go here. This is like Queens. And I wound up going to Hampton. It was between Morgan and Hampton. And I wound up going to Hampton.
Yeah, he went with Pusha T was selling bricks of coke as opposed to guys playing dice on campus. Pusha T selling weight out to school. You didn't want to go be around the dice. You want to be around the cocaine. Sorry, Pusha.
Your
statute of limitations is up.
Well, you know, Morgan is right in the heart of Baltimore, you know what I mean? That's one of the reasons why I love it and one of the reasons why I teach there, you know what I mean? Because of it's right in the community, you know? But as a professor, man, you know, I bring that experiential learning that you were talking about, you know, we bring real things into class. So I teach creative writing, I teach film. And my whole thing is, you know, I found my voice, I found my purpose, and I'm a writer. This is my fourth book, actually, you know what I mean? So,
really?
Yeah, this is my fourth. So, you know, and it's the only one that's on the bestseller list, you know what I mean? So this is kind of my most recognized book.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I've been writing for a while, so my whole thing is helping other people find their voice, you know what I mean? So I work with students all the time to help them cultivate their own voices so that they can express themselves, you know, in the way that it did for me, because this stuff saved my life, man. Reading, writing,
just more of that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And what we did, what was so crazy about this project is I didn't want to stop at just the book. You know, I got the Sundance Film Fellowship to write the movie, so I'm working on the movie. But then what we did was we decided to do something completely different, which was to create a soundtrack for the book. So we created an original soundtrack with original music.
That's why he keep busting out in the rhymes.
Yeah, yeah.
But how do we get more of us to be professors? Because nowadays, being a professor, being a teacher is not cool. You know what I mean? It's a rapper, it's a DJ, it's a basketball player. I don't really see young African American professors. And if I do, they're usually teaching gym.
Yeah. Jim, yeah, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's
true.
No, it's not.
You're right. I mean, you're right.
I don't really see that many.
You're right.
I went to a couple of high schools to speak, and a lot of the African American teachers were doing gym or what do they call it? Physical education.
Yeah.
A lot of the Spanish teachers, I'm serious, a lot of Spanish teachers were doing, guess what?
Well, I mean, rappers
Spanish.
And DJs have a dope mark.
It's the truth. You know, I went to school, and, you know, Miss whatever, what do you speak? What do you teach? Spanish, you know?
Yeah, Miss Rodriguez.
Miss Garcia.
Miss Garcia.
But you know, like the thing is, I think rappers and DJs have dope marketing plans.
Right.
And I think in a lot of ways for academia, for professors, I am part of the new marketing plan. Right. I am the new model. I think that a lot of times, and that's why I travel. I've been to over 40 countries. I travel all around this country, and I want young people to see me. That's why I wrote a memoir, not a novel, not something made up. A memoir. I want them to see me. Well, I got a soundtrack to
professor
it. You know what I'm saying?
the
only professor passing out the mixtape for the last day of class. That's actually one of my class. I teach a hip hop class where we look at the social political issues that affect hip hop, that hip hop was birthed from. We look at the evolution of it. We look at the culture of it. We really study it, you know, analytically. But you know, one of the things I try to do, man, is to let them see me, so they can see what a professor could look like.
Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be some, you know, some archaic thing that they have in their mind. It could be something new. It could be something fresh. Your professor could be a rapper. You know what I mean? Word. Your professor could be a rapper and could be a writer and could be a filmmaker. And, could, you know, I think we live in a world now where we're out of these boxes, man. Like, you have to be multidimensional in this currency, in this environment. And so I think part of it, how do we get more? You guys having me on. You know
Absolutely.
What I'm saying?
That's part of it.
You know what I'm saying? Because they see, like, wow, like, there's so many people, young people that I've come in contact with who I've changed their whole model, their whole blueprint. Because they're like, oh, wow, you could do that. And you could do, I didn't even know I could do that and have access to these things and have the resources and take care of my family and be able to do all these, you know. So it's really like showing them. That's the thing. I think our whole generation is about visuals, right? That's Instagram. True. So we have to show, mm-hmm. right? When you show, It resonates.
And I think right now, you know, people will probably say, well, he don't look like a professor. Well, the question you should be asking is, what does a professor look like?
Exactly.
But you know what? But that's what most people think. Now, I was thinking to myself when he said he was a professor, I was like, damn, does he wear that T-shirt and hat in class?
Well, why not?
Yeah. I think it would be dope. But
definitely. But this is exactly how I dress in class. Dope. You can ask all my students. I come in fitted, snapbacks, Tim's, whatever, because that's who I am. You know what I'm saying? And just, you know, when you become whatever profession you are, it doesn't mean you take away who you are and your core essence, because at the end of the day, that rebellious 13, 14, 15, 16 year old, that's still me.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so what I've done in a lot of ways is, and that's what Buck really is about, that whole notion of Buck now, I've become a lot smarter. You know, I used to be, I think, a rebel without a cause, and now I'm a rebel with a purpose and a cause. You know what I mean? So the rebellion is still there. You know, I was in Baltimore. I was out there with him. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's part of my spirit.
You live in Baltimore now, right?
Yeah, I live in Baltimore, and I live in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
What did you see out there as you were down there for the Baltimore riots?
Because you blew up some cars.
And the reason I say that is, you know, me and Charlamagne believes he doesn't agree. But he said he understands with what a lot of people
I believe in cause and effect.
There.
I believe you can't keep pushing somebody and expect somebody not to push back. And so I may not agree with the riots, but I understand why they're happening.
And I feel like a lot of times when we get those riots, we hurt ourselves in the long run. We hurt our own community. We hurt the stores and the places that we shop at, that we, you know, own or purchase or have to do with. And I think we kind of hurt ourselves at the end of the day. You know, at the end of the day, I hate to see us get arrested and get felonies on our record, and then when we try to get a job, we can't because of a mistake or something that we did, foolishness, or that we shouldn't have done.
But the problem is they can't get jobs right now anyway, regardless of that. See, what we saw in Baltimore was, like, we saw the crazy, what happens when you underfund the school system, right? When you invest in the prison industrial complex, right? When your schools are criminal, when you don't invest in neighborhoods. We saw all these things coming out. And so we got destitute poverty in Baltimore, right? We got underdevelopment. We got, like I said, an educational system that takes money, hundreds of millions of dollars out of the school system every year, and they put that money into prison industrial complex, right? And so we see now the illustration of what happens when you do that to a community, when a community is constantly beat and beat and beat and oppressed and oppressed and oppressed. We see what happens. And so I'm actually surprised that it doesn't happen more often.
You know, but
every city in America has the potential to do that.
No, you're right.
Absolutely.
Like right now.
We tore up our communities, but it's
not
like,
our communities. Let's be for real.
We don't really own.
It's really not ours. We don't own none of that
stuff.
But
it's where we shop. It's where we do business.
We drive to the next town over.
You know what? We're not going to be welcome to the next time over. And a lot of people can't drive.
We're not welcome there now.
But it seems like the things that they care about was they cared about them Baltimore Orioles in that game.
They
made sure that stadium was safe.
Oh, yeah. And you really got a chance to see the classism in Baltimore and in America with the, I don't even call them riots. I call them rebellions. And I feel like these rebellions.
I call them non-peaceful protests.
I feel like these rebellions have been happening since 1619, since black folks basically got here in America. There's been, if you look at the history, it's cyclical. Every 10, 15 years, you see these huge, what they call riots, what I call rebellions in the urban cities in America, and they always are related to race. And this is historically, you can go back to the 18th century, 19th century, you see these same things happening, whether it's Miami or Philly or Cleveland or Detroit or LA or Watts or, you know, Baltimore. It's always the same thing. Newark, right? And so, you know, for me, it's a continuation of that, you know what I mean? And you saw the classism because if you went to the harbor, you saw a whole different story.
Right.
Like, they had, that's when you saw the big guns, you know what I'm saying? The tanks and all of that. And, you know, you Whole Foods, nah. None of that happening in Whole Foods.
They were protecting all that.
They were protecting all of that. You know what I mean? And so, they value. We realize in the society that property is more valued than
black
people.
Person's life.
Than a person's life. Because right. They're talking about violence in Baltimore with the protesters, but actually the only violence really that we saw was violence against Freddie Gray.
And that's my thing.
He broke his neck.
The media can make it seem like it's so bad to riot. How about make it seem like it's so bad for police to kill?
To kill.
And on black men. Or just kill people, period.
All the time. And we just saw in Wisconsin, he just, no charges.
Right.
Robinson.
Yep. Tony Robinson.
Tony Robinson.
Now, just a quick little segue. The girl Nia in the book.
Yeah.
Are you still smashing that? You just kind of let that go in the book. It's like you was in love with her.
Pervert, man.
I just want to know. I'm like, so what happened? Did they get married?
Yeah, I got to say, any brother out there that's doing this thing, shout out to the queen that's holding him down because that's so important. For me, when I was young, this book is a coming of age. So mm-hmm. This is between the ages of 13 and 18. When I was young, there was a girl named Nia, and she really held me down. She mm-hmm. actually helped deter me away from some of the negativity.
Gotcha.
She asked questions. She questioned me, in ways that I hadn't really been questioned. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Like, she showed me a different side, and I always appreciate that about her. We're not together, that was a long time ago.
So you got your life together and didn't go back to get her?
I found somebody else, Later on in life, she found somebody else too. She's good. We're both good, That's still my friend. She's a psychologist. And she's for the Navy, and she's doing her thing.
How's your mom doing? Because in the book, you talk about your mom's mental health issues.
Yeah, what I do in the book is I intersperse my mom's journal. I used to read my mom's diary back in the day. We didn't talk a lot.
She's still alive?
Yeah, my mom's still alive. Mm. And so I used to read her journal, and in the book, I actually put her actual journal entries in the book. So
did your mom clear this?
Yeah. Okay. In fact, my mom, it was her idea because she struggled so bad with severe mental health issues. She felt like the black community, we don't talk about depression and stuff enough. Mm. You know what I mean? So she said, because she talks about depression, suicide, all of this stuff in her journal entries. And she said, when I was writing my book, she was like, you should use it because even though it's personal and I don't want the world to know all my problems. Mm-hmm. She said it might be helpful in starting a dialogue and creating a conversation because a lot of times we just like, oh, it's all good. But it's really not all good and we self-medicate, but we don't really, when I first started understanding about what mental health issues are, like all the different, I realized that every single person I grew up with has a mental health issue.
Absolutely.
Everybody on the block.
Yes.
Needs help.
When you just pull out a gun and start shooting, something is clearly wrong
with you. Something is clear. And we might be like, yo, Scoop crazy, man. Yo, Scoop be wildin'. But Scoop
really
is crazy.
Really, crazy.
Really
crazy.
Like, yeah. Like, he really.
We now to start using the clinical terms. We understand the very. Scoop's really bipolar. Scoop really is psychopathic, Scoop's really a sociopath. That's what you start doing.
Yeah, so my mom is doing a lot better now. I realized that a lot of the things that me and my brother were doing, just, we were wilding out, it kind of affected her. Depression is chemical imbalance, so it's not just what somebody does, but we were exacerbating the problem by some of the things we were doing, So my mom's doing a lot better now,
Do you think your father left her because of the mental health issues, or did they really just grow apart?
Man, I think, he doesn't really understand mental health. I think some people in our community, we still don't really, just snap out of it.
Right.
But we don't really
understand. Boy, stop acting crazy.
Yeah, stop acting crazy. But we don't really understand. So I don't think he understands, the gravity of the situation.
What's your relationship like with him now?
It's always been turbulent my whole life. So right now, it's pretty much, we don't really have it's not really popping.
He's got to be proud of you, though, because, in a lot of ways, when I see you now and read about how he was in the book, you are him.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, well, no,
very pro-black, very conscious, what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and that's a lot to do with my mom, too. Like, my mom, both my parents, I was born in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. Like, my parents, how at the end of Belly, Nas is like, yo, we should move to Africa. Mm-hmm. My parents actually did that. My parents are from America. They, way before Belly, decided to move to Africa. They changed their names. So I was born in Zimbabwe, in Harare, Zimbabwe, during the revolution, And so then they eventually moved back, and then I grew up in Philly. Philly is, from age 3 on, I was in Philly. But they both instilled that in me, so I always had that, But, yeah, I think with me and him, I think the thing about life is You never can really judge a man until he's in the grave. You really don't know how things are going to happen. I didn't know I was going to be here. And I used to see my book right in the back over here. You know what I'm saying? I was like, yeah, I got to go on there one day, man. But you never really know what's going to happen in life. So with that situation, I just try to do it day by day. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think with all of our parents, we try to be better than they were. You know what I mean? And you see their weaknesses, you see their strengths, and you try to be better. And so that's what I'm trying to do, really.
And what is Talib Kweli doing with this soundtrack?
Talib Kweli is doing everything, man. This dude, he's a big part of the book, just in the sense of when my transformation started to happen as a writer, as a thinker, as a person. I started, that was around the time when Black Star was coming out and Raucous. And, you know, I was hearing lines like, at exactly which point do you start to realize that life without knowledge is death in disguise? Or lines like, these cats drink champagne and toast death and pain like slaves on the ship talking about who got the flyest chain. And that, like, I never heard someone rap like that. You know what I mean? I was always into Pac and Nas, but he took it to another level for me. And so the first song I ever did as a rap artist, as a hip-hop artist, was called Gods in the Hood. Razz Cass reached out to me. Talib Kweli was on the track, and that was my first song. And we killed that joint, you know what I'm saying? And so from there, me and Kweli developed a relationship. And when I told him I wanted to do the soundtrack and sent him some of the music I've been working on, because I've been working on music, because really, to me, like, I want to use all mediums, you know what I mean? So to me, all of these things are languages. Like, writing a book, that's a language. Making a movie, that's a language. A poem is a language. All these different things. Music is a language. Music is probably the most universal language. Mm-hmm. So when I told him, I sent him the music. Actually, he's selling the book, this book on his website, KweliClub.com. He called me one day, was like, yo, how much is the book? Da 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 da. We started talking about the book. I'm like, actually, I got music. I sent him the music, and he was like, yo, like, I gotta get on this. Like, whatever. So his company, Javoti Media, is actually officially presenting the soundtrack. He's been involved, like, I mean, every day, just, you know, building, strategic. We were just in Baltimore. We went to a whole bunch of places in Baltimore. He was in the community, Reflection Eternal Barbershop, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he's just been a big part of, like, helping me, like, shepherding me into hip-hop, into the musical side of it. I wrote a book called It's Bigger Than Hip-Hop, which is, you know, used in hundreds of colleges and universities about hip-hop and, you know, kind of, like, examining the social political aspects of it. But yeah, he's just been like, he's been a big brother really in this whole situation.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, man. Yeah,
yo,
man.
I appreciate y'all, man. This is amazing, man.
Is it hard not to smash any of the chicks that you teaching? Never mind, don't worry about that.
You know, it's not hard, man. You know what I'm saying? Discipline, man.
He's young. You know
discipline, man.
You know what? You don't even ask. This guy here.
Where can they get Buck, man?
They can get Buck at mkasante.com, at KweliClub.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Been on the bestseller list for 2 years now. It's available everywhere. Anywhere books are sold, man. You know, they can get the soundtrack, KweliClub.com, mkasante.com. It's streaming on DJ Booth. It's at OK Player. It's just everywhere, man.
All right.
But and it's free.
Dupree Miller.
And it's free. And shout out to Dupree Miller, Jan Miller, Nina. You know what I'm saying?
You ad-libbing for him?
They're my people too.
All right, that's MK Asante. It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.